Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is a founder and partner of GBAO Strategies and one of the great pollsters in the world, Jim Gerstein. Now remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And remember to vote for which member of the Trump administration you think is so bad the founding fathers would have sent them back to England by answering using the survey link in the episode show notes. Polls are open and we'll announce the winner the week of July 4th, so make sure we hear from you. Please check out the links to our sponsors, Miracle Made, Smalls, Superpower, and HERS WL in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. James, biggest primary this week was New York, and the results were mixed. New York City Mayor Mondami endorsed three candidates. They won, but they may complicate the politically existential question of winning in November. Those New York City seats are all safe Democratic seats, but two of those candidates are socialists, and one, Dara Lee's Chevalier, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, is really a problem. She has made despicable comments calling Obama evil, Biden a rapist, called for defunding the police and ending prisons. The problem here is not that they represent anything, but Republicans are gleeful. Trump and others already are saying this is a Democratic Party. The conservative Free Press wrote, "The nation follows New York." Now, all that's wrong. It just is simply wrong. New York City is not and has not been a harbinger for politics elsewhere. The socialist left can win a few in heavily Democratic urban areas. They'll be a force whenever they win in Westchester or Wisconsin or North Carolina. But I think the narrative, which Republicans will really stress, is that this is the future of the Democratic Party. I might say as an aside, another unfortunate result was Dan Goldman, a really smart investigator-interrogator, lost to a Mondami-endorsed candidate who will be a backbencher in Washington and will lose Goldman's investigative skills. Now, there was some good news. There really is some good news. And that is out of the Empire State. Kate Conley, a special ops commander who served six tours of duty, national security expert, won the primary up in Rockland and Westchester counties, take on Republican Mike Lawler. She's the Cheryl, Mikey Cheryl, Abigail Spanberger, Alyssa Slotkin of this year, and Mike Lawler is in trouble. That's one good note, but I must tell you, James, some of the other stuff worries me.
So, Mr. Valliant, the New York Times reported, and I have the quote right here. I'll get to it. She is against passed off all her views. She has attacked interracial relationships in the American flag. Lady, I ain't in the same party as you. I'm sorry. I'm just not. And I actually do think it's time for Democrats to talk the S word, schism. I really do. Everybody's always said, no, we're coalition, we're big tent. And there's just some shit that I can't be in the same tent with. And we talk about what Mondami was 3 for 3 last night in Manhattan. They call it the commie corridor. Fine. Jason Crow's service pack, vote bets, 10 for 11. You wouldn't know Jason Crow exists.
Okay. No, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know Abigail Sandberg exists. You wouldn't know. And I want to be very specific. I understand the free press for being here, because if they nominated David Duke or something like that, we'd be the same way. I understand all that. To the extent I understand the Times, because they are the New York Times, so they have to cover. They are the hometown newspaper. But the idea that we must neglect everything else that's going on, all of these other primaries, all the recruits Jason has, all huge, phenomenal successes we've had, and declare that the party is now under the control of a democratic socialist of New York City is insane. But and understand, these people do not like Democrats. Not only are they not Democrats, they wish Democrats poorly. So I just cannot. Maybe there's a way that you can say to, I guess Mondami is the leader of it, is, you know, you insist that, you know, try to insist that the people that run under your banner run as a democratic socialist and don't use the Democratic Party as your guideline, and let's negotiate the terms of a schism here. Maybe we can part under some kind of advantageous terms for both of us. But I'm done. I'm not in that fucking political party. I am totally comfortable in a political party that spends time questioning the policies of the government of Israel. In fact, I'm enthusiastic about that. I don't want to be in a political party that denies the right of the state of Israel to exist. That's just not, I just can't do that. I'm sorry. It's just not doable.
They are a great gift to Donald Trump. And unless other Democrats stand up, certainly people like Obama, but also some of the younger Democrats, and said, this is not us. And the second point, I think, James, is it is absolutely crucial now that the Democrats don't just win in November in the House, pick up 8 or 10 seats, because that group of crazies will absolutely just sabotage Hakeem Jeffries every step of the way. They got to pick up 25 seats. And I think what worries me about this group, James, look, you had the squad. AOC, I don't agree with much of what AOC stands for or votes for, but she's smart. And she caused trouble in the beginning. Pelosi made clear that wouldn't work. And she's ended up actually a pretty good member. I don't think this group has that potential.
I don't either. And I think AOC is smart. I could be in the same party with her. Anyways, I can't be in the same party with Ms. Chevalier. Can't do it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not there.
She's a hater. And you know, James, here's what's interesting. Why don't the Republicans get labeled as the party of Clay Higgins and all of his racist comments, or the party of Andy Oglis, who said all Muslims ought to be deported and home and gay people have no right in America? But they're kind of considered sort of fringe, and, you know, obviously Donald Trump is.
This may be an opportunity for Democrats to say, look, we stood up to what we thought was an extremist element in our coalition. You never stand up to what you think an extremist element in our coalition.
Yeah.
I really think there's a lot of advantage in that. Yes, we don't want people in our coalition that are against interracial marriage. We don't want people in our coalition that are against the American flag. No way. But you allow people in your coalition, in fact, you embrace people in your coalition who are like Clay Higgins or Andy Ogles, who embrace this kind of nonsense. I think there is a political advantage to Democrats saying, hey, go your own way. We're not going to try to keep you. Just take off.
Well, I'm still going to celebrate Kate Conley, though. That's a great victory up there. But, you know, going to the point you made earlier, when Mondami won in 25, he's a very, very impressive politician. I don't agree with him much, but he is a very impressive and I think articulate and charismatic politician. But he wins in New York City, and Spanberger and Sherrill win in New Jersey and Virginia, much more important, much bigger, more important for national politics. Mondami got 3 times the press coverage that they got. And at some point, someone's going to have a reckoning with the media. Sure, you got to cover these people.
They can't help themselves. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm just telling you. I do these interviews. I did an interview for a huge group and was being interviewed. So all I wanted to talk about was Mondami. It was like it was the only issue. And this was a big-time journalist. They're just hopelessly addicted to this story while the other story underneath him. But today, I looked on it, the Chinese communists have now building better supercomputers than us. And we're fucking around with the algae in the reflecting pool. All right? They just cashiered General Chris Donahue, might be one of the most greatest soldiers of the United States Army of this century. They just ran his ass off. All right. All of that. We got $40 trillion in debt. We have no idea of what the fuck we're doing in Iran, how to get out of there, what to do about it, or anything else. And then all I'm reading about is the Democratic Socialists. And okay, and I'm never going to be able to stop that. I can do all the rants I want. I can go on TV. I can do videos. You and I can talk about it ad nauseum. You're trying to get people off of crack cocaine. It just can't be done.
James, let me, one other race last night caught my attention. The race for governor of South Carolina, the Republican primary. Trump had long endorsed the lieutenant governor. And then about a week ago, he said, well, I'm going to also endorse her opponent, who is the attorney general. And the attorney general won last night, and Trump claims a victory. You know, it's like that inept general who said, where are my troops? I got to find my troops so I can lead them. I mean, it was just...
That Saturday, listen, and I don't know, but it is a potential huge earthquake coming Saturday, and it's in Louisiana. And I said, oh, no, James, you say you're in Louisiana. I said, no. There is a runoff for the Republican for the Cassidy seat between the Trump and Jeff Landry back, Julia Letlow. Then there's a guy named John Fleming, who's a state treasurer. He's a real, real right winger for a long time. Trump's endorsed Letlow. If Fleming were to win, which most people I talk to think it's a possibility, I don't know. If that happens, that's an earthquake. That's an earthquake. That's in Louisiana. That's a hardcore red state, as you can imagine. That's Trump going all out for one candidate and getting beat in his own base. I mean, all the people that voted for Clay Higgins and all of them, the most intense Clay Higgins people are all going to be for John Fleming, I can tell you. Just watch that race Saturday, and if Fleming wins that, I don't know how else you could interpret that, but that Trump's just losing his grip on his base.
Well, but we certainly will watch it. Let me just mention one other result last night to watch for, and that's South Carolina won. Nancy LaCour, a Army general who Pete Hegseth fired because she actually, I think, was a Coast Guard general, but she was quite distinguished, 35 years of service. He fired her because he doesn't like to have women officers. She's running in that South Carolina 1 district, which Nancy Mace is giving up. A Democrat has won that seat before. In a good year, watch South Carolina 1, James.
Absolutely. And I'd get General Chris Donahue to campaign with me.
Yeah.
That's that Charleston district. And a long history. That's where the Citadel is. I would definitely get called Chris Donahue and go campaign in that first district.
I hope he does better than I did, James, and I hope he appreciates that she was an admiral, not a general, and that she was in the Coast Guard, but she was a distinguished officer. James, let's go. I want to talk a little bit about a book that you talked about for weeks, the Maggie Haberman, Jonathan Swan book on Trump. You know, one point I saw they actually said that this year and a half was less about incompetence and more about overreach and reckless disregard of everything. I am about both. Everything I've read in that book shows, yes, a reckless overreach, a disdain for the rule of law, but man, they are incompetent. I mean, just look at, you know, Exhibit 1, Iran. They had no idea that the Iranians were going to close the Straits of Hormuz. You look at all their appointments, many of whom they've had to undo because it's rank incompetence. And what he's done is surround himself with a bunch of absolute sycophants who say, yes, boss, you are right. And we are paying a huge, huge price for that.
So the book is excellent. I referred Fentanyl to, wrote a great and justifiably great review of the Times. And I understand the headline story is the incompetence and stupidity and the grossness. But the larger issue is this. And she has to, of course, they have tapes of everything. They're leaking. They're leaking like a sieve. They leak what happens in a bedroom. They leak what happens in meetings. They get audio of meetings. And Maggie and Jonathan have all of them. If you notice, no one has come out and said anything is untrue because they know that all the tapes and audio is there.
No, they said they want to find out, how they got the tape.
Find out. Question. But the larger point is, this is going to continue. Trust no one. If you work in that snake pit, you can't say anything. You can't do anything. Trump is Adler's as mine is. He knows that he's surrounded by traitors. He knows he's surrounded by leakers. He knows that everything he does is going to be leaked to the next person writing the next book. When I tell you that this thing is in its last days, I'm telling you, this thing is in its last days. They're going to be, this was stunning. The leaks that came out of the Clinton White House were, what happened, the meeting and the fight between Bob Rubin and Bob Rice on what happened, what the effects of this was. All right. That's all normal shit. Talking about what somebody has in their bedroom and a fucking Oreos all over the cover when they got to clean it up and talking about that, that's not normal shit. And I'm telling you, it's going to get worse.
It is. There are little tidbits in there, too. I've had people tell me, well, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, he's not as bad as those others. Scott Bessent was the guy who said Zelensky was he called him a little fucker is the term he uses to describe Zelensky. And he says he's Mr. Bean on crack. Let me tell you something, Mr. Treasury Secretary. This guy over there is fighting a war against a terrible aggression. He has shown courage. He's shown guts while you're sitting here collecting your coupon checks from all the goddamn money you made and doing a terrible job of running the Treasury Department. So yeah. That too.
Why don't they put that cage or whatever they call that thing in the White House and it lawn and let's watch him and Howard Lutnick go at each other.
James, but who would you cheer for?
Maybe they can both land simultaneous blood.
Knockout. I saw a movie once where that happens, but I don't remember it. But in any event, okay, we got a lot going. Stick with us because we got a really, really fascinating show still to come. Hey, James, with new heat records being set everywhere, all around the globe, how great are Miracle's cool and clean sheets for sleeping your best?
Well, shit, I'm going to Milan at the end of the week. I like to take them. It's fucking 98 degrees there. It's the hottest they've ever had in France. And I'll tell you what, it's hot here, too. You better get these things because this is going to be the in demand. This is the item of the future. Anything that keeps you cool is good cool.
Yeah, so if you wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable, take it from James. It's time to upgrade the temperature in your bedroom, which can make or break your sleep. That's why you need to switch to Miracle-Made Sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep perfectly all night long. Sleeping at the right temperature is a critical way to feel rested the next day. And whether it's too hot or too cold, Miracle-Made Sheets truly give you maximum comfort in any weather. They make pillowcases and comforters also. Plus, thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Sheets require way less laundry days because they stay clean and fresh 3 times longer. Not only is that fewer wash cycles, but it's great for your skin. Hidden bacteria can clog your pores and cause acne. So sleep cleaner and clearer with Miracle. With no more gross odors, life is a whole lot better for your household. Join us in getting better sleep every night. Not only are Miracle-Made Sheets smooth, breathable, and ridiculously comfortable, they don't have the steep price tag of other luxury brands. Miracle Sheets feel nicer than bed sheets used by some 5-star hotels. When you get in bed, it's a vacation. It really is. I can imagine myself in all kinds of exotic spots. It's your call. Choose Miracle to upgrade your sleep or give the gift of Miracle Rest. Go to trymiracle.com/war room to try Miracle-Made Sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use promo code war room, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free three-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/warroom with the code warroom at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode, and the link is in the show notes.
Sleep cool and clean with Miracle.
Hey, James, we have the perfect guest for this week, you know, actually for most weeks, Jim Gerstein, the eminent pollster with expertise in both American public opinion and Israeli public opinion. Jim, let's start with Israel. Elections this fall, Netanyahu was politically finished after October 7th. Then he waged ferocious wars in Gaza, attacks Iran and Lebanon. He's the ultimate survivor. Can he do it again?
I'm happy to report that he cannot. There's not been a poll in Israel in the last 3 years that shows any path for him to return. Despite that, there is a conventional wisdom in Israel that he is Houdini and is going to pull it out of, you know, come back out of nowhere and surprise everybody. But the reason that won't happen this year is his superpower had always been security. And that was shattered on October 7th, and he has not recovered from that politically. And when you see things that happen in Israel that people would typically rally around the leader, things like this, the perception that he destroyed the Iranian nuclear program over a year ago. He said he destroyed it for generations. I guess a generation meant less than a year because they went back to war again. But these accomplishments along the way never gave him a political bump. There's no path for him to return. The question is who from the opposition will emerge as the strongest force in the next government.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a minute. If he's defeated, is he going to run the risk of going to jail?
His trial has been delayed and slowed over and over because of the fact that he is prime minister. They've introduced all sorts of excuses and reasons why he can't appear at the trial. And so if he is no longer in office, a lot of that will dissipate. Trump has been pressuring the president of Israel to pardon Netanyahu. That has not happened. We will see if that happens. But I think in any case, the public there is pretty much ready to move on from him.
Jim, the Iran deal, as it emerges, who knows what it will be in another week, the Trump cut out of desperation, that's very unpopular in Israel. And it's opened, I think, a real rupture in U.S.-Israeli relations. How serious is that?
I mean, from the Israeli citizen perspective, this was a terrible war that has not been finished. They were told that there was going to be regime change. They were told that there was going to be an elimination of a nuclear threat and ballistic threat. And they spent a lot of nights and days in shelters as very heavy ballistic fire was coming into their home, into their country. And they didn't get anything for it. And there's also from their perspective, nothing's changed. And they went through all this. And if anything, they're now weaker because, as you point out, Al, there is a rupture between Israel and the U.S. on what comes next. And I think they've learned, if you recall, Trump was very popular in Israel for a long time. I think they've learned the real face of Trump in terms of reliability and what he says and what he does. Is not something that they can count on. And I think you see a lot of anger in Israel against Trump right now.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier who might possibly emerge in the fall. And just in looking the last couple of days at some of the Israeli press, yeah, one candidate that is frequently mentioned is Gadi Eisenkot, who was at one point the head of the IDF. Served as military secretary to Prime Minister Barak. What's your take on him?
Gadi Eisenkot is a very impressive person. He was a successful head of the IDF, chief of staff of the IDF. He is seen in Israel as the most popular public figure in Israel by far. He's seen as very honest and credible, and good on security, all these things that Netanyahu is not. People see those things, those positives in Eisenkot. He's relatively new to politics. And when he first entered, when he first broke off from Benny Gantz's party and started his own, he stumbled a bit. He is kind of recovered and has the momentum actually right now, is the leading party in the opposition and has a lot of support. There are two other main competitors in that space. Naftali Bennett, who was a prime minister, joined forces with Yair Lapid when they were both, who's the head of the opposition. They were both going down in the polls at the time. Turns out when you merge two parties that are going down, it doesn't make for a success story. They've continued to decline, and Eisenkot has been the beneficiary. The other major figure in the opposition is somebody who I like a lot and work with, and his name is Yair Golan. He was one of these generals that drove down to the Nova Festival on October 7th and just started to save. He was a retired general, former deputy chief of the IDF, who drove down to the Nova Festival, started saving people under fire on October 7th, national hero, and is offering a much stronger voice in opposition to Netanyahu and the right wing there and kind of holding that space.
Well, I did read that Eisenkot actually is for a two-state, a Palestinian state, which would be a big change if he could ever pull it off.
Yeah. I mean, what you find is retired military in Israel tend to be very pro-political solution and using military achievements to achieve to bring political change and negotiated settlements with their enemies, because they are the ones who know that forever war isn't going to work for Israel.
James Carville, time to grill Jim Gerstein.
Let's do some fundamentals of Israeli politics. The Knesset, which is the equivalent of parliament, has 120 seats, correct?
Correct.
To have a governing party, you have to have a coalition of 61, correct?
Correct.
Of the 120 seats, right, and people got to understand, Arabs have a say in this. They get to vote.
Right? Correct, Professor Carville, correct.
Currently, how many are Arab-held seats, or held by Arab parties?
Right now, there are 10 Arab seats in Knesset.
So this is my money question. I saw a poll, and I tried to go back and pull it up, but I was too incompetent to do it, that said that they could form a government with 61 votes without the Arab parties right now. Does that sound reasonable to you?
It's very much on the edge. It depends, on the poll, the week to week. You're really looking at anywhere from 58 to 61 seats of the Jewish parties in the opposition.
So that's attainable, but challenging goal. Would it matter very much to the government if they were able to form a government without the Arab parties? Would that give them somehow or another more credibility, or does it matter, or what?
So that's a longer answer, James. That is the complicated question in Israeli politics.
That's why we have you on here.
All right, here we go. So I would say that there is a large part of the Israeli political culture and sentiment, conventional wisdom, that you need a Jewish majority, which is very problematic for those of us who believe in liberal democracy, right?
Right. I'm saying we don't believe that. We believe every citizen is an Israeli citizen first and foremost. But
right. So you have some of the opposition leaders are afraid. They think politically it's going to be dangerous for them to say, oh, we will include Arab parties in our coalition, because this is the ridiculous thing about Bennett and Lapid, who had an Arab party in their last coalition when they were in the government. They're saying, well, October 7th changed everything and we can't have them. And it's a political maneuver, which is silly, because the Arab parties in the Knesset had the least to do with the failure, the security failure of October 7th. The people who had the biggest security failure were Netanyahu and his partner. So it is a topic of conversation. It is a big piece to the political discussion. I would say that, as I mentioned before, Yair Golan, he's the one candidate in the opposition who unabashedly says, of course we want an Arab party in the coalition. They're 20% of the country. They should be in it. They have their needs, et cetera. And when you ask in polls, which would you rather have, a coalition that includes an Arab party or a coalition that includes Netanyahu? Overwhelming support for a coalition that includes an Arab party. That tells you everything you need to know about what's going on in Israel.
Now, Netanyahu's not going to be in my coalition. Now, what do you want to talk about?
Exactly.
And it's not that, then we can proceed. But before I let you go, because I want to segue into U.S. politics, I know Al's going to ask me to come back. But you see a lot of polls, and just so people understand, Jim Firm polls what is called the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. So if they're like going to add a challenger or trying to figure out a way to do it. So I'm just going to ask you another. In the last 90 days, in terms of the Democrats' political prospects, would you say that they've stayed the same, gotten slightly worse, or gotten slightly better?
Slightly better. They've started in a strong position and it continues to get better.
So so what we see in the public polls is being reflected by what you see it in both ways. I'll turn it over now, and I'll be back with a lot. Go ahead, Al.
Hey, Jim, talking about that election, our midterms, in politics you have to walk and chew gum at the same time, I know. But cost of living, Trump corruption, health care, Iran war, what are or should be the priorities of particularly Democratic challengers this year?
I mean, it all starts with the cost of living. You sit in focus groups across the country. It doesn't matter what part of the country you're in. Doesn't matter whether you're talking to people who are middle class, lower middle class, working, whatever. Everybody feels that their cost of living is out of control, and they see a system that they view as rigged, working against them, corporations, politicians too cozy, and they're the ones who are getting hurt by it. Now, you mentioned Iran, you mentioned Trump, all these other things. I mean, Trump hangs over everything. He's unpopular across the country. He's unpopular in swing states, in swing congressional districts. He's baked into this. I mean, you can't escape it. And each day he says something nuttier than the day before. So this is, it's not as if, and this goes to what James said, there are things getting slightly better. I mean, each day he says something that makes it harder for Republicans to regain any focus or say anything constructive that would help them on the cost of living. Add the Iran war to this, an unpopular war, which is seen as driving up costs, particularly the cost of gasoline, but we know that drives up all sorts of costs because things need to be driven from one part of the country to the other. Goods need to be driven, and people connect these things. So they were in a bad spot before the Iran war. Now you have an Iran war that's unpopular and seems driving up the cost of living. It just got worse for them. We'll see if the latest ceasefire is a ceasefire. I mean, this is a war of ongoing ceasefires, it feels like. And, you know, I don't think a sudden resolution of this is going to happen. And even if it does, it doesn't change the basic fundamentals of this election.
Right. Jim, in I guess whatever we would term a normal midterm, the out party's looking to pick up seats that the incumbent party won by 5 points or less. In a wave, it's more than that. It could be double digits. And maybe with the redistricting games the Republicans made, you need more of that ladder. Do you see seats that Republicans won by, you know, 10, 12, 14 points that the Democrats have a real shot in this year?
I do. I think a Republican plus 10 district is in play right now. I mean, you see Democrats outperforming the 2024 election. In all these special elections or elections we've had since 2024, Democrats are outperforming Republican the 2024 vote in that jurisdiction by 10 to 15 points on average. I think those are all in play. I think states that Trump won by 10 points are in play. I mean, we see Senate seats that are very achievable in Alaska and Ohio and Iowa and Texas. I mean, this is a map that's expanding, not contracting.
Let me ask you about a couple other Senate seats. Maine. Do you have any sense, whether you're involved in it or not, as to whether Plattner still has a realistic chance to beat Susan Collins?
every public poll that's come out shows that competitive or him ahead. So it's hard to say that despite all the problems that he's had, that it's disqualified him. He seems everything seems to have bounced off of him so far. Now, we'll see. General elections are different than primaries. But I think one common dynamic between the primary and the general is age, and that he is tapping into some desire for change and movement from beyond the status quo that is not only true in the Democratic primary, but can play out as well in the general. I think Susan Collins, yeah, she has won elections that nobody thought she could or should win. But, you know, that was before she voted for Brett Kavanaugh and said that, well, he lied to me as her excuse, or as why she was tricked. I just think, it's such a wave year that somebody, you know, that we can win races where our candidates have had a lot of trouble.
Let me ask you finally, then turn it back to James. You have pretty strong independent candidates running in Nebraska, where the Democrat has dropped out, and Montana, where there's some pressure on the Democrats to drop out. In those pretty deep red states, could you envision an independent winning?
I can. I think it's, you know, in Nebraska, Osborne is a compelling candidate. You flagged the complication in Montana,
right,
where if you have a Democrat running, but we'll see how that plays out. But the independent there is incredibly credible, rooted in Montana, and has does things and says things that resonate broadly in that state. I think that the anger towards Trump is very real even in these red states. The desire for change and shaking things up is even more real. And an independent can tap into that, particularly in a way in certain states where the D next to their name is a problem and a challenge. So I think those would be amazing pickups to have and realistic.
James. So, Jim, my current obsession in American politics, and we all know there's a racial divide. The whites tend to behave and vote differently than non-whites. We know there's generational divides in politics. Younger people tend to be considerably different. One of the big divides that I think, and I'm really talking to people and thinking about this, is a geographical divide. The rural and small-town America are completely almost removed, have been or feel like they're removed from the Democratic Party. And I've been texting with some friends about different campaigns, just more Georgia than anywhere else. I think the Democrats should come up with a rural small town renewal plan. They just have three things. Raise the minimum wage, increase VOTEC spending, block grants for better internet. It doesn't matter, but I think sometimes, and a lot of focus was rural and small town America just went out on their radar screen.
It would be a game changer.
And particularly after last night, where we didn't cover anything else but the New York primaries. All right, so if I'm sitting there in Keokuk, Iowa, I'm like, that's all these people talk about. Every time they turn around, I look at CNN, I look at MS, I look at Drudge. It's all they're talking about. What about me? And I think if we just said, "Yeah, what about you?" We see you. I'm pushing this really, really hard with people. I'm being, you know me, when I get a bit in my mouth, I just think there's a go. You got a second.
We know that, Jim.
You got a second look here.
I could not agree with you more. Go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so I got the green light from Prof. Gersing to pursue my rural small town America renewal hospital plan. Let's open hospitals, don't close. But right. I know you poll and a lot of things. Why don't you share with us a couple of, and I know it's hard to do. You don't like to do it. It's like, who's your favorite niece or who's your favorite nephew? Well, I love them all. You know, but who are one or two candidates that you see around the country, particularly challenges, that really impress you as somebody that really has a chance to go far and in politics.
Sure. And I hate to be unoriginal here because you keep having these people on your show.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's not originality. Ways the minimum wage. It's not original, but God damn it, it's popular.
Joe Mendoza is incredible out in Arizona. You had her running Cadence on your show, and you, right. Bobby Pulido. I mean, Paige Cognetti. You have these, I'm citing people that are in different parts of the country. And I think that's what's interesting here is you have different, there are some just, it doesn't matter if it's Pennsylvania or if it's Arizona or if it's Texas there are these candidates are tapping into the challenges people are having with cost of living. And it's different in different places. Some places it's utilities, some places it's housing, some places it's groceries, or it's all of the above, but they are really doing it in a way that is true to their district and that they come from that district and they identify with that district. By the way, I don't know her, but last night I was intrigued by this vice admiral who won in South Carolina.
Well, yep. Redhead on a show. She's coming. She's coming.
I mean, this is fired by Pete Hegseth is running for, a district in South Carolina. That I think is like a plus 10 or plus 12 Republican district. Yeah. That's the kind of thing.
You can get, Joe Cunningham had that seat, some time ago, but Joe did have that seat.
Yeah. And picking up on James's rural point, I'll tell you another guest we had on was Jamie Agger in Western North Carolina, which is one of the most rural districts in the country. He got a good shot down there, Jim, mm-hmm. we think.
Mm-hmm. Josh Turek in Iowa.
He's on our guest next week. He's confirmed.
I think what you guys are doing is awesome, giving these folks a platform to be heard and obviously exposes them to the ability to raise money and profile and all that. But we have great candidates out there. Military backgrounds, personal stories, mayors, people who've accomplished things. I'm very bullish. I'm very hopeful. I think, I guess the mark of success is getting on the politics war room with Al Hunt and James Carville. There's a lot of them out there. And
Kingmakers.
It bodes well. It bodes well.
So, Jim, I think Al, it's at this point of ultimate despair, 2024, and people would say, James, what gives you hope? And I would say this, and y'all can both chime in. I have never seen a political party in my lifetime, which started on the day of the Battle of Leyte Gulf, the largest naval battle in history, over 81 years ago, a party with more talent at every level than the Democratic Party today possesses. Right now, I'm talking about 92. I'm talking about, anything that you want to talk about. It's just staggering when you see these people coming out, I think, anyway. And you see the post parade. We watched the horse flesh go by. Hey, look at that, almost looks like secretary or somebody.
And as you know, in a wave election, to go beyond the minimum and really expand this, the talent matters. It really matters to win those tough, tough races.
Yeah.
It's to get from plus 6 to plus 9, ooh. Mm-hmm. That's where you kick in. Albert, thank you. Go ahead.
No, Jim Gerstein, you are a fabulous guest. We did everything on Israel, everything on America. I don't know. Maybe next week we'll get you on to talk about Bangladesh because you know everything. But really, seriously, you have been a terrific guest. And we want a commitment that you'll be on before the election at least once.
Whenever you want.
Official post of Politics 2020 Aura. Put it on your resume.
I want to be on when the
lawyer for LSU football.
I'll take it. I want to be on when the Bears win their first home opener, their opening day game. So
you want to be that, and you want Michigan to repeat? But God, they lost their basketball coach. So your son must be very upset, Jim.
Dusty May is great, but you can't fault him for wanting to go to the NBA, but it hurts.
You go for the money. Just as long as the players have the same option, I'm not going to criticize it.
James will know this. It might be harder to be a college basketball coach these days than an NBA coach.
Absolutely. With NIL and everything else, God.
Yeah.
And you got, you know, the board looking over you, or an NBA, you got one person owning that. That son of a bitch is making money. They don't give a shit. Right. Okay. That's all they care about.
Right.
Too true.
They're making money.
All right, Jim Gerstein, thank you so much. How good does it feel knowing you're giving your cat delicious meals that are also healthy for them, James?
Essential. I'll tell you, I had my cat, I had that stray cat, and I had the thing for about 18 months, maybe 2 years. And but of course, my cat wasn't very well, and I fed it good cat food, and I mean, the difference is overnight. There's nothing sadder than a scraggly cat with, you know, poor coat, and when you get a healthy, happy cat with a lush coat, it just makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. You know, James, all cat lovers can't say enough great things about Smalls. Like a lot of you, probably thought the cat kibble in the grocery store was the right way to go. It's next to the food we buy, so it has to be good, right? Wrong. Once you find out that it's mostly filler, corn, and unpronounceable ingredients, you know, we knew cats deserve better. And once you switch to Smalls, they have a lot more energy and their fur feels softer and more luxurious than ever. Smalls Fresh Cat Food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free, 100% human-grade ingredients you'd find in your fridge. And it gets conveniently delivered right to your door. In addition to James, they have a ton of outstanding reviews, like the one that said, and I quote, "This has been the best decision I have made for my cat. He absolutely loves this food. His coat is shiny and he licks the bowl clean. High quality products, no artificial fillers or byproducts. Absolutely love Smalls," end quote. We're not surprised. Cats use protein as their main energy source, and more protein means more fuel and sustained energy. Smalls Fresh, gently cooked, preservative-free cat food gives them high protein and improved hydration for strong bones and toned muscles. Plus, a balanced diet leads to less shedding, fewer hairballs, better digestion, and more silky shine. Smalls is so confident your cat will love it that they'll refund you if they won't eat their food. So stop serving your little creature a bowl of processed shortcuts for a limited time. Because you are a Politics War Room listener, get 60% off your first order, plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/war room. One last time. That's 60% off your first order, plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/war room. The link is in our show notes.
Feed your cat right with Smalls.
How important is being knowledgeable and proactive about our health with Superpowers lab tests, Mr. Carvel?
Well, it's not important if you want to die, but if you'd like to hang around a little bit longer, this stuff is like, first of all, it's unbelievable because you get what they call a CBC, complete blood count. And it's so affordable, you can't believe it. And if you're one of these people that just hates to go to the doctor, you know, if you get this, it's not going to tell you everything, but it's a pretty good indicator of your state of health. And at a minimum, anyone should get this, and it's really much more affordable than it is to go get it at a lab or a doctor's office, the way to do it. It's an amazing product, and you could determine things about your health early and deal with it.
Well, you know, right. Nobody wants to leave the doctors more confused than ever. You know, as men of action, we need data and a game plan. Enter Superpower. It's one simple blood draw with over 100 biomarkers, way more than what you usually get, and it unlocks a real understanding of your body for years ahead. You know, it's just amazing how much you'll find out. Their app includes detailed information on your heart, liver, thyroid, hormones, metabolism, vitamin and mineral levels, and environmental toxins. That means you get insight on everything from disease prevention to brain fog or optimizing your workouts. Hands down, it's the most comprehensive and advanced system out there. Even with our busy schedule, Superpower made it easy. They can send a licensed professional to your home, or you can visit a nearby lab. Afterwards, you'll have answers to questions like, is my diet healthy? Am I sleeping well? Am I improving? And more, with their actionable health plans based on our results. We have nutritional guidance, lifestyle and behavioral adjustments, and supplement or prescription suggestions buyable directly from Superpower. You can even get your true biological age that you can track over time. And let's just say, James and I officially have a youthful vibe. It's not a one-time snapshot. Each test builds on the last, so you can see progress instead of starting from scratch. Plus, their on-demand clinician team answers questions, so you know exactly what everything means without Google or an appointment. So stop reacting and start proactively improving your health based on personalized data. Gather your other testing services, cost hundreds more for less. Superpower gives you high-end concierge-level care at the best price on the market. So make this the year you stop guessing about your health with Superpower. For a limited time, our listeners can get $20 off to unlock their new health intelligence. Head over to superpower.com and use the code WARROOM for $20 off your membership. That's code WARROOM, and after you sign up, they'll ask you how you heard about Superpower. Do us a favor, and you could tell them that Politics War Room sent you to support the show. The link also is in the show notes.
Get your health numbers with Superpower.
You know, there is one vote, one action that will determine American values more than any other over the next couple months, and that is the nomination of Todd Blanche to be Attorney General. If Blanche is confirmed, it's a validation of all the lawless acts of the past year and a half. Critics are making a mistake if they focus primarily on the slush fund for Trump's allies, including the January 6th criminals. That was outrageous and grounds not to confirm him, but Blanche will elude or lie his way out of that. The same with Blanche's mishandling of the Epstein scandal, desperately trying to protect Trump and giving special treatment to Epstein's convicted accomplice, Ghislaine Maxwell. But these are only the tip of the iceberg. The case is much bigger than that. The Justice Department's lawlessness under Blanche, who's run the department, the Trump-ordered political prosecutions of James Comey and Letitia James, the mayor of Newark, the corrupt deal he cut with New York City's former mayor, Eric Adams, in return for playing ball with Trump on immigration, the unprecedented number of grand juries that have rejected indictments sought by Blanche's Justice Department, the political litmus test established for the FBI and the Justice Department, and the departure of thousands of Justice Department employees, including the best prosecutors, national security, and civil rights attorneys. If Blanche is confirmed, it's a vote to continue all of these dreadful practices and the total politicalization of a lawless Department of Justice.
Thank you. For my outrage, there's a great comedic thing. It's called the delayed reaction. And you've seen it 1,000 times. Where somebody says something or something happens, then the actor for about 2 seconds goes about his normal way of doing things. And then he goes, wait a minute, what did I just see? What did I just hear? I had that reaction when Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Senator Bernie Moreno, a Republican of Ohio, wrote a joint op-ed in the New York Times. I cannot explain to you how significant and different this is, calling for the end of the cap on Social Security taxes. Allow me to explain a second. It is literally that important. Up to, and I could have it slightly wrong, $188,000, 6.2% of all your income goes into Social Security Trust Fund. and the employer matches the 6.2. If you're self-employed, it's 12.4. But that stops at $188,000. This would put it to infinity. I can't begin to explain. Anybody that believes in progressive taxation, of which I do, and I think I speak for you, Albert, we are a very big proponent. You couldn't have a more progressive, more revenue generating, more different, more everything that you could think of. Now, is it surprising that Senator Warren would be for this? Frankly, not. But here's a United States Senator from Ohio. A guy was born in Columbia. He made a lot of money in business. This, to say that he don't, is startling. The second thing is, somebody is reading the tea leaves in Ohio. I am saying this is an indication to me that economic, I don't know, you were populism, aggressivism, leftism, I have no idea. This country is moving so quickly against the moneyed people that you can't believe it, to the point where United States from Ohio, and I can't tell you how big this, like to the Wall Street Journal editorial board, to Mitch McConnell, to any kind of Republican institution, thinking person, this would be laughed off the table. I cannot tell people listening to this what a significant and huge event this is. And a lot of money. Like if you make $1 million a year on $825,000 of it, you're paying another 12.4%. It's a lot of freaking money. It's $100,000. It's going right to the treasury and going right to pay out to people who don't have money. I'm so for this, I couldn't even fucking tell you how much I'm for it.
I think you're for it.
My money earning years are behind me. Just to be a hypocrite about it. Thank God didn't do this shit in 2005.
All right. No, it's an incredible. I was shocked to see Bernie Moreno's name on that.
It means something. It's like, that's not, he didn't make a mistake. And by the way, I guarantee you he passed that by his caucus or at least the leadership before he did that. I have no way of proving it.
You would certainly think so. How important is maintaining a healthy weight for quality of life, James?
Well, it's what I say in this great company is go to an old folks home and see how many fat people you see there. The answer is none, or if you see any, it's not very many. I mean, this is just so such a medically studied thing to know that proper weight management leads to better health outcomes. I even James Carville will go on the record saying that's a fact.
You got a point. You got a big point. If you've had trouble losing weight, join the club. Enter Weight Loss by HERS. It's designed to support you in reaching your goal, and HERS now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. The results are incredible, and it's an amazing and effective tool for you or those you care about. With Wegovy at HERS, you can lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss. That means no needles. Everything is 100% online. And HERS connects you with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. Weight loss by HERS even goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips, like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, HERS makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Are you ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/warroom. to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's F O R HERS.com/war room. Again, for HERS.com/war room. Weight loss by HERS is not available in all 50 states. WeGov is a registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including information, safety information, WeGov clinical study information and restrictions. So visit forHERS.com. The link is in our show notes.
Lose weight by HERS WL.
James, here we go. Our great listener questions. They really get warmed up during an election year. John in Sonoma, California says, by accusing Tallarico of being a woman, is Texas confessing they have nothing else in the tank?
Tallarico's a woman and Michelle Obama's a man. That's all they got. Yeah. I mean, we need to mock this. We don't need to be outraged by it. We need to mock it. By the way, I'm going to see if I can do a precinct in Atlanta to see what the turnout is going to be among black males over 45. I bet you it gets as close to 100 as you can get. And we need to use these kinds of things. We need to use our benefit. And no one should like to cry to God for saying that. And he's quite proud of himself. And his spin is, well, I called her a man because she's very good with her hands. She's a hard worker. So, yeah.
Trump never said a word. Anyway.
No.
Yeah.
He's scared he loses base.
Gary in Falls Church, Virginia asks, have either one of you ever considered running for public office? Someone asked me that question years ago in front of my wife, and she just started to laugh. So for me, the answer is no, Gary. I actually think James could be a hell of a candidate in certain districts.
No, we haven't thought about it. And I'll tell you why. It's too much risk and it's too hard to work. And the people that I admire the most, maybe in the country, at some level or just in general, are politicians, because they do something that many of us want to do, and they dare to fail publicly. And I don't think I had the guts to give my enemies a chance to tell me exactly what they thought of me, so I never put my name on any ballot.
Tony in Indiana. Now, Tony, next time you write, tell us where. Indiana is a big state, so tell us where you're from. With all the money spent by parties on political ads, Tony asks, why haven't Democrats produced a short, sweet, clear comparison of Project 2025, which Trump swore he knew nothing about, and all the BS his administration has done and keeps doing on Project 2025?
Well, I understand, and there's two kind of strategists going into this cycle. The people that say we need a plan, and the people that say, fuck the plan. What plan? The plan is we're not Trump. I'm kind of more in the second lane. And I mean, look, if you're asked, if a congressional candidate is asked, you know, what's your agenda? We're going to raise the minimum wage. All right. We're going to reorient the tax code to favor middle class people over the very wealthy.
And restore Medicaid cuts.
And pass an ethics bill.
Yep.
Just pick five generic 70% popular things. That's what we're going to do. We're probably going to have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't need anything exhausted.
I agree. Barbara in Norwich, Vermont says, how long before Trump starts selling the blue paint chips from the reflecting pond? What will be the price? Barbara, he hadn't started already. I'm shocked if he hasn't started already. Of course he's going to do that. As for the price, it'll be excessive. I also expect, I'm surprised he hasn't started selling remnants of the East Run that he torn down. It is all about, with him, all about grifting, all about money. So he's lied about. I mean, can you imagine that reflecting pond, which is such a wonderful signature monument of Washington, you know, just that whole to destroy it the way he has, and then blame it on saboteurs. Some saboteur, he says, came in there, I guess, late at night and cut a 200 or 300 foot slash in the bottom of the pool. It's just, it's sickening, James. Sickening.
I agree with you 100%. And it's just like the 2020 election, just keeps running his fucking mouth about nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Megan in Fort Myers, Florida, says, has anyone in the Trump orbit fallen further in stature than Marco Rubio? Do you think Rubio regrets what he has become?
No. J.D. Vance has fallen so much further than Rubio, it's not even funny.
Yep.
Okay, I mean, how can anybody fall further? I mean, I guess heads of the Bobby Kennedy and people like that, I don't know if they had any place to fall, but they couldn't be any lower than they are. But I think Vance has suffered more than anybody in that administration.
Yeah, and Megan, I'll tell you, I think Rubio actually gets a better press and gets more credit than he deserves, because he looks like the adult in the room. And I guess when it's a group of pre-Kers, it's easy to look like the adult in the room. I am less impressed with Marco Rubio than our some of his newfound admirers.
Yeah, but he hadn't fallen like Vance.
I agree. Bill in Houston, Texas, said a lot of thought about the Democratic nominee in 2028. But have you considered the Republicans' return to normal by nominating someone like Nikki Haley or even Jeb Bush? Not going to happen, Bill. Maybe 32, maybe 36, maybe 40. I don't know when. But this party is a MAGA. Trump is sinking like a rock. But the MAGA influence is still going to be profound in the party. They're haters, and they've attracted. There's more than that. And I think a lot of the voters who vote for him aren't haters. But when James mentioned earlier that Louisiana race, if that guy wins, he beats the Trump-endorsed candidate, he's going to be around when Trump's not around, and I think a lot of the others. So I don't think there's any chance, at least by 2028, that there'll be a Republican return to normal.
This is a prediction. Okay, probably could be wrong, but I'll make it because I don't mind making it. A candidate of more than one is going to run for the Republican nominee and attack Trump on the basis that he lost connection with MAGA. He wasn't MAGA enough. Mm-hmm. That's why, you understand, whenever something happens, the reason it happened is because, well, they weren't enough. When Trump starts losing, the MAGA people are going to start attacking him by saying, the reason that you fell down, you were popular, but then you turned your base on MAGA, and they're going to use the Iran war as example number one to attack him, because MAGA doesn't like that. So my prediction is it's not going to be Nikki Haley or Jeb Bush or something like that. It's going to be a person who runs at MAGAism from the right. That's how far they go. That's how far gone they are. So yeah. My prediction is, and boy, if you see this happen in Louisiana, that's why I think this is such a telltale event, is Fleming is way to the right of the MAGA-endorsed candidate. So pay attention. I think the attack is coming at Trump was lost his MAGA core, his central theme.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Our last question is from Greg in West Hartford, Connecticut, who says it's become clear all three branches of the federal government operate unethically. Insider trading in Congress, Supreme Court justices accept lavish gifts and hunting trips, not to be outdone by our president accepting a 747 from Gutter, not to mention the other scams. So James, I think Greg says, you know, what kind of common sense ethical rules can we bring to stop all this stuff?
Well, the first thing is the Supreme Court could subject itself to the same code of ethics that federal appellate court and federal district court judges are. That's not that hard. The executive branch, somebody running for president, hint, on the Democratic side says, I'm going to publish a code of ethics that every employee of the executive branch is going to be subjected to. And the penalty for breaking this is termination. You do that easy.
Yeah.
Clearly, I take anything. It doesn't even take an act of Congress. You have an executive branch. You violate this code of ethics, you out.
Every single time,
have to take something. They just take the same, let the same things apply to them, apply to every other federal judge in the country. It's easy. Just do it.
Every single Democratic challenger ought to run on that, on a code of ethics, which bans insider trading, among other things. I agree totally.
And then strengthen the congressional ethics code. I think Ossoff has a point, but why do they need to be trading stocks? I know Nancy Pelosi, who I love to death, was always opposed to this, but I think that's a popular, smart move. You got a good ethics move? You can't trade stocks if you're in the United States. Boom. Put it in the quad trust.
Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Miracle Made, Smalls, Superpower, and Hers WL in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them because when you do, you help make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. And remember, listen now, remember to vote for which member of the Trump administration you think is so bad the founding fathers would have sent them back to England by answering using the survey link in the episode show notes. The polls are open, and we're going to announce the winner on next week's show, so make sure we hear from you. You can also find other shows you might enjoy in the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. And remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.